You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. On the program today, what it means that the Fed got it wrong on inflation. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today, the 20th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So, you know, back in the day when the word from the Fed was that inflation was transitory, and back in the day, I mean, you know, a year and a half ago, there were a couple of really prominent voices taking the other side of that argument that no, it wasn't transitory and that the Fed was way behind the power curve. Mohamed El-Arian was one of those voices. He's the president of Queen's College Cambridge and the chief economic advisor at Allianz. And we had him on the program a couple of times back then. And we thought now, with inflation definitely not transitory, but maybe kind of easing a little bit, and the Fed slowing but still hiking interest rates, we thought this would be a good time to have him back on. Welcome to the program.
Wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
It has been, I checked my records here, it's been a little bit more than a year since we had you on. A lot obviously has happened. Last time you were here, transitory was the big thing. Now it's soft landing, and when's the Fed going to pivot? Let me, before we get into details, get your sense of where this economy is right now.
This economy is slowing. This economy faces an uncomfortably high risk of recession next year, and this economy is stuck with inflation that is too high and a Federal Reserve that's playing catch-up.
Let's get to that catch-up part. What would we look like right now if Jay Powell and the Fed had followed the advice of you and others and started hiking interest rates sooner than we did?
Let me start by saying counterfactuals are inherently tricky.
Yep.
However, what do we know? We know that had they not fallen into this cognitive trap of inflation being transitory, had they acted earlier, they could have hiked into a growing economy and they could have avoided what is one of the most front-loaded hiking cycles in history.
Explain that for the civilians in the audience, front-loaded hiking cycles.
So normally you increase interest rates gradually and in a very measured fashion because you want to assess the impact on the economy. If you are late, and the Fed has been very late, you have no choice but to move really quickly. To make it specific, this Fed has increased interest rates by 0.75% four times in a row. That is a record that is almost unheard of, including during the 70s and 80s when we had a much bigger inflation problem. And they did that because they were so late and they had to play catch up. The problem with moving so quickly is that you don't have enough time to assess what the impact on the economy is.
So to that point, Gina Smilak, who's at the New York Times, as I'm sure you know, she's one of our Friday regulars, she noticed a Goldman Sachs observation the other day, pointing out that Goldman Sachs saying the impact of Fed policy might be hitting, instead of with that very famous long and variable lag that Milton Friedman talked about, might be hitting right now. What do you make of that?
It certainly has hit right now in the financial markets. It certainly has hit right now in the housing market. The problem is that because the Fed waited for so long, the inflation challenge has shifted from the interest rate sensitive sectors to sectors that are less interest rate sensitive, services and wages. So yes, they are hitting, and yet the Fed is still behind the curve.
Well, so what do you think the Fed should do?
Well, at this point, they have no choice but to go after inflation. That is their mandate. And because they're so late, there will be undue damage to the real economy, to employment, to livelihoods that could have been avoided. Because they're so late, they've lost credibility. And because of that, we risk more financial instability.
Let's talk about the Fed's credibility for a second. How do they, can they get it back?
They can. They have to start by owning their mistakes, which they haven't done yet.
Well, I mean, Jay Powell has said to me, we blew it. I mean, he didn't use those words because he's Jay Powell, but he said it certainly would have been better had we moved sooner. And that was, you know, 5 months ago, whatever it was, 6 months ago.
That's absolutely right. And he has also acknowledged that there'll be pain. But what they haven't done, which is what the European Central Bank has done, the Bank of England have done, is explain to us why their forecasts have been consistently wrong in the same direction. And until they do that, markets won't fully follow their guidance.
Do you think they just have, like, I mean, is it as simple as bad forecasters and bad modeling among the 400 PhD economists that they have?
So I think they've ended up with four issues, and I think that's undebatable. One is failures of analysis and being cognitively trapped by the wrong characterization of inflation. Two, failure of communication, that communication has been inconsistent. Three, failures of forecasts. The forecasting errors have been not only significant, but in the same direction consistently. Mm. And then the fourth one is failure of action. Even when they recognized at the end of November last year that inflation was not transitory, they didn't move fast enough.
So to the future now, the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, specifically talks about we have to get back to 2%. And, you know, everybody acknowledges we're not going to be there for a very long time. Do you think it's realistic for the Fed to try to get us back to 2%, or should they just say, you know what, we're going to have to live with 3.5 or 4?
So there's several aspects to that question. Can they get us back to 2%? Yes, they can, but it would be at a massive cost to the real economy. That's not a great way to get to 2%. Second, if they were formulating the inflation target today, I doubt it would be 2%. Mm. I think most people agree it would be higher than that. And then third is, even though there's good reason to have a higher target, this Fed that has lost credibility cannot be seen to be increasing the inflation target at a time when it has failed to meet its inflation target for so long. So the best we can hope for is by the middle of next year, we've gotten to stable inflation about 3-4%. They keep on telling us that they're going to pursue 2% in the future, and society learns to live with a stable inflation rate that is not 2%. That is the new definition of soft landing, now that we can't avoid a recession, unfortunately.
Mohamed El-Erian is the president of Queen's College. He's also chief economic advisor at Allianz. He is also many other things. He does a whole bunch of stuff. Dr. El-Erian, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
On Wall Street today, not a whole lot of anything, actually. Bumpy, kind of flat-ish. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Consumers have been driving this economy, well, we've been driving it forever, right? But specifically, we've been driving it since we started coming out of the worst of the pandemic recession. Consumers have just been it, spending despite inflation and rising interest rates and fears of recession. Consumer spending was up in October. We've mentioned that a couple of times. In a couple of days, we'll get the November number. The question, though, is how long can we, the American consumer, keep it up? Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has that one.
You know those white elephant parties where you buy gifts for people you don't really know and then get stuck with literally the worst present ever?
I've never been that interested in those to begin with, so this was a great reason to cut back on that spending.
Noah Lomax lives in Chicago, works in marketing. He isn't necessarily budgeting. He's just being more careful here and there.
Instead of going out with friends for drinks, we'll stay in and have friends over for drinks.
The reason? Good old inflation.
There are some routine things that I do that I'm like, oh, wow, that was quite a bit more than I remember it being the last time. And then when you look at the end of the month, everything is just a bit up.
Lomax says between the cutbacks and the rising prices, his spending is about flat. And that is exactly what Lydia Basur expects from most consumers next year. She's a senior economist at EY Parthenon.
Overall, we're expecting consumer spending to flatline in 2023. So that would be a pretty weak outcome.
Here's why Basur is expecting consumers to cool it. First, she expects the labor market to get worse, which would start to trigger anxiety. Second, consumers are burning through their savings.
credit card balances are up sharply from a year ago. And if you look at the savings rate in October, it was down to one of its lowest level on record.
And consumers are feeling it. Stephen Rogers is with Deloitte.
In our most recent monthly tracker, 4 in 10 consumers say their financial situation worsened in the last 12 months.
And that is souring spending plans.
Compared to last fall, consumers have been signaling lower spending intentions in all categories except housing, utilities, groceries, and transportation.
That said, there are also signs of consumer strength. Sarah Wyeth is with S&P Global Ratings, which is a marketplace underwriter.
On the plus side, you've got low unemployment, household balance sheets are healthy, and there's still this pent-up demand for in-person social events, travel, etc.
Wyeth predicts consumer spending will still have some life left in it next year, growth of around just 1%. But she says it is, as it has been these past few years, a very murky future. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
On the topic of consumers, as Sabri just was, we've spent some time this holiday shopping season talking to people on the other side of the retail sales counter to see how they are dealing with the economic vibes of this day. Annie Lang Hartman runs the stationery and gift company Wild Letty up in northern Michigan.
This is our first year that we've had a location that we're able to keep open during the holidays. So that's been really interesting to see what in-person shopping looks like for our brand. Our biggest challenge this winter really has been just figuring out foot traffic and trying to figure out buying trends and what our store hours should be. We haven't had anything go up to the point where we needed to change our prices on anything. We had one manufacturer that added a 7% surcharge to any product that they make for us, and they just did away with it a few months ago. So our costs have actually gone down. So we're feeling very, very lucky about that. Over the next couple weeks, there's a lot going on, but at the same time, kind of the biggest priority coming up is making sure everybody gets a bit of a break on the Wild Letty team. We're going to shut down the store for a few days so everyone can just be with friends and family and sleep and rest. Then we're heading into another busy season for us, which is Valentine's Day. Since a lot of our product line is stationery, that's another big, big season for us.
Annie Lang Hartman running Wild Letty up in Leelanau County, Michigan. Coming up.
So it's an abstraction of the nativity scene.
Something for everybody. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 92 points today, nearly 0.3%, closed at 32,849. The NASDAQ picked up 1 point, basically flat, not even basically, just flat, 10,547. The S&P 500 added almost 4 points today, 10%, 38.21. After the bell, FedEx said its quarterly earnings and sales were lower than a year ago, and the company warned of continuing weakening demand. Shares fell in early after hours trading. Steelcase makes workplace furniture like the office chair you might be parked in right now. Its stock lifted, pneumatically perhaps, more than 9% after reporting better than expected third quarter earnings and putting out a cheery forecast. Bond prices went down. The yield on the 10-year T-note thus went up 3.69%. You're listening to Marketplace. You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The omnibus spending bill that Congress is hustling to get done before taking off for the holidays is 4,155 pages long. $1.7 trillion goes out the door if it passes as is. Still and all, there are things not in it, among them a slew of bills about online privacy, liability for social media companies, and general anti-competitiveness in tech. The divided Congress that January is going to bring means this was probably the last chance for a lot of those proposals. But just because the United States isn't moving on them doesn't mean nobody is. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on tech regulation in Europe.
The EU's Digital Markets Act takes aim at gatekeepers, big tech companies that provide a connection between consumers and other services, like Apple's App Store. It aims to stop those companies from stifling competition.
European law, not just in the tech space, but more generally, has been much more aggressive in trying to control dominance and create level playing fields.
Daniel Crane at the University of Michigan says the EU regulation, which takes effect in 2024, could disrupt the whole app ecosystem. It requires, for instance, that Apple allow iPhone users to download apps from places other than the App Store, or that iMessage users be able to communicate with users of WhatsApp.
It's not that it's impossible for the big tech companies to have a different system, but at some point it does become very difficult, and so Europe begins exerting influence globally.
In the past, big tech companies have often found ways around Europe's rules, says Nicholas Rodelli, an analyst at CFRA.
We think that European regulators have learned from that.
Rodelli says this legislation has better enforcement mechanisms, like expensive recurring fines and expedited prosecution. And it's not just happening in Europe, says Eric Seufert, an analyst with Mobile Dev Memo.
The momentum is heading in that direction anyway globally.
South Korea, India, and Japan are also taking action. But Seufert says the momentum to spur competition among app marketplaces might have already passed.
For the most part, consumers have already established habits that are probably pretty sticky and difficult to disrupt.
He says the law could have bigger effects on digital ecosystems that are still developing, like the metaverse. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
The Biden administration has said it wants half of all new cars sold in this economy to be zero emission by the year 2030, and it is spending billions of dollars in incentives for car companies and car buyers to make that happen. Some of the newer manufacturer incentives aim to get electric vehicles and their components made in the United States. But that has not been without controversy. So this week, the White House put off announcing details of one new rule that would require a certain percentage of battery components to be sourced here in the United States or in countries that have free trade agreements with us. Marketplace's Samantha Fields explains what's going on.
Tax credits for electric cars have been around for more than a decade. Gil Tal at the Electric Vehicle Research Center at UC Davis says those credits are designed to do a few things.
They're incentivizing the car companies to make these cars. They help the buyer to purchase them in a little bit lower price, so they create more demand.
And especially since the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, they're pushing companies to make electric cars in the U.S. Now, EV tax credits are only available to people who buy cars assembled here. Morgan Bazillion at the Colorado School of Mines says that change is a big deal.
If you drive around in the United States these days, if you're not seeing a Tesla as an EV, you're likely to be seeing something coming from South Korea, a Hyundai or a Kia.
Americans used to be able to get a tax credit for buying an electric Kia. Now they can't.
And that has been a large point of contention between the car manufacturers, but also the government.
The now delayed requirements around where car makers source their batteries, also a big deal, he says, because most of the minerals to make those batteries come from China. And making a switch quickly is not easy.
There's clearly a negotiation happening to buy time.
Adi Tomer at the Brookings Institution says foreign car makers don't want to lose out.
The American auto market is by far one of the largest in the world. And with the expected explosion in EV adoption going forward, it was really important for automakers across the world to see that they would continue to be a part of the American auto marketplace.
In recent months, a number of companies have announced plans for new car plants and battery plants in the U.S., and he expects more are coming. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
There is, in every city this time of year, that block, the one where every house goes all out, every last inch covered in lights. In Baltimore, that block is, as it happens, on 34th Street, hence the locals calling it the Miracle on 34th Street. This year, at least three of the couple dozen houses on that block have been sold. Sometimes the listings highlighted the holiday light tradition, sometimes the buyers heard by word of mouth. But what's it like, do you suppose, when it's not just a home you're getting, but a whole new way of life for the month of December? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has that one.
It's 5:30 in the evening, and hundreds of visitors are already wandering down this Baltimore block of lit-up homes. Those house shopping in the neighborhood will see most of these 2 to 3 story houses are decorated in traditional holiday lights with a dash of Baltimore weird. One house has a Maryland blue crab. And then there's a very pink display that's a nod to a local character, film director John Waters.
A lot of flamingos.
Yes. This is on a beach.
The house belonging to Joey Zeladon and Martell Esposito requires a bit more explanation.
So it's an abstraction of the nativity scene.
All the classic figures are represented by freestanding doors on a platform. 3 closet doors are the 3 wise men. As for the main players, Jesus is a small white cabinet door, Joseph is a larger brown one, and the Mary door is painted blue, with a small opening at the bottom that used to be a cat door. Esposito and Zeladon say a lot of the visitors get it.
Most people get a chuckle out of it, you know. It's kind of unexpected.
Yeah, it's a nice balance of reverent and irreverent.
This block is in Hamden, a neighborhood that's an eclectic mix of longtime working class residents, several generations of hipster artists, and first-time buyers who want to be in the middle of it all. The whole light tradition was started back in 1990 by longtime resident Bob Hosier.
The guy across the street could not hear my Christmas music, and he asked me if I would run a speaker over to his house from mine, which I did, and I put lights to it so it didn't look too cheesy.
Hosier says other neighbors asked him to string lights over their homes, too.
And here's where we are.
The townhouses on this block, called row homes here, were mostly built in the late 1800s, and in recent years have sold for between $200,000 to $400,000. That's on par with other homes in this zip code, says James Lamb, a real estate agent with Berkshire Hathaway. He says the lights are a net positive for the neighborhood.
Because people come from all over to enjoy the displays, and frequently they patronize restaurants and other small businesses in the area.
There's no formal obligation to put up lights, though people who buy on the block tend to want to. Like Lamb's client, Cliff Torrance, who just moved from Nashville last month.
I love doing stuff like this. I love, you know, putting on a show and entertaining and just, you know, making people happy.
The listing for Torrance's house led with the fact that it was on the block with the lights, so he knew what he was getting into. Torrance has spent $500 on twinkle lights so far. He doesn't know what his December electric bill will be, but he's willing to spend twice that.
Let's just put a comma in there, $1,000.
Older residents of the block say their bills don't require that kind of punctuation, especially when using LED lights. Still, not everyone wants to commit. Rex and Lauren Anderson live a few streets over. They brought their daughter to see the lights, but aren't interested in owning on this block.
It's a little too much responsibility, I feel like. This is a bit much. We got about 3 strings of lights. I don't think we could hang here.
Along with being willing to put up the lights, residents need to be open to an audience. Artist Jim Pollock moved here in 1989 and actually invites visitors into his front room on December evenings to look at artwork.
Hi, folks. How y'all doing?
Pollock likes to make art out of junk. His front yard has a giant Christmas tree made of hubcaps. He says he'll sell the occasional piece of sculpture, though mostly what people buy are the angels he makes out of old National Bohemian beer cans.
Anyone in particular, or do you want the first one?
Whichever one you give me.
Okay. Merry Christmas. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
A beer can angel is only $10, which means if you missed out on the most recent house for sale, one's now under contract, you can at least take a little bit of the 34th Street holiday spirit away with you. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, before which I have to tell you that last month I was on a Delta flight to LAX to Boston, on which I paid, or okay, fine, Marketplace paid, $39.95 for in-flight internet. $40 to get online. That's why I noted with some interest this morning an article in the Wall Street Journal that said Delta is going to go all in on free internet on its flights starting next year sometime. Okay, we're going. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. Banking regulation is the topic. Wells Fargo, already, shall we say, reputationally challenged after that fake accounts scandal 5 or 6 years ago and a bunch of smaller transgressions. Wells Fargo has agreed to a $3.7 billion settlement with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau over illegal fees and interest charges on car and home loans. $1.7 billion is the straight-up penalty, the CFPB's biggest ever, by the way, more than $2 billion in direct consumer restitution. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mieten, and Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on-demand. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.